KNOM Update News. I'm Anna Rose MacArthur, and it's 9:02. Last week, the Senate Finance Committee approved a $2.2 billion capital budget, and while that version will likely be modified before leaving the House, it includes several million dollars for the Bering Straits region, including $3 million towards the Middle Dock expansion and Nome's Harbor. Port Project Manager Joy Baker says the addition of a third dock is essential for Nome to keep up with the rapid increase in vessel traffic the last few years.
For those that don't understand the purpose of the Middle Dock project, it is critically important to the port operations.
The only other chunk of money on the line is a $1 million grant with the Economic Development Association that Nome is hoping to secure. Baker says even with so many balls in the air, the goal is to begin construction on the harbor this season. Other funding priorities for the region range from money for Elam's Washititeria to search and rescue equipment for Golovin. Shishmaref and St. Michael could get a combined $1.3 million for airport improvements. Over $1 million is marked for efficiency-saving energy projects. A potential wind farm for Stebbins and St. Michael is in the final design and permitting stages, and Brevig Mission's water system will be retrofitted for improved heat recovery. Both Anvil Mountain Correctional Center and the youth facility in Nome are set to receive funds for deferred maintenance, totaling over $800,000. Money from the capital budget is also set aside for heavy development projects in western Alaska. $8.5 million was set aside for the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority's planned road to the Ambler Mining District. The House will have to finalize its amended version of the capital budget by the planned end of the legislative session this week. The Flint Hills Refinery in North Pole plans to cease operation this spring, and the Parnell administration warns PetroStar's refinery in North Pole might be next. A bill crafted by the administration would prop up Alaska's three remaining oil refineries with $150 million in state funds. Even some legislators who are helping advance the bill say they're uncomfortable with it. At a House finance hearing Monday, North Pole Republican Representative Steve Thompson said he's worried it's not enough money. He says Fairbanks needs PetroStar's interior refinery, especially if it hopes to attract the new F-35 fighter units to Eielson Air Force Base.
No jet fuel, goodbye. F-16s moved. That means Eielson's going to close. 1,500 civilian jobs, going to have empty houses in Fairbanks. The economy's going to tank further.
State Natural Resources Commissioner Joe Balash says the high price of North Slope crude makes it hard for in-state refineries to compete with fuel imported from outside. The administration originally proposed $300 million in refinery assistance, primarily to help PetroStar, which faces higher costs for crude delivery now that its neighbor Flint Hills won't be contributing. Anchorage Democratic Representative Les Guerra says he wants the refinery to stay open, too, but he calls the bill pending in the House now insane policy.
It's a bailout. It's a giveaway. It's poorly crafted. It costs the state $150 million over the next 5 years, and it gives $50 million to Tesoro, who doesn't even want the money. At a time when we can't afford our schools, we need to come up with smarter solutions than just giving money to companies.
The bill would allow an Alaska refinery to collect $10 million a year from the state for 5 years. That would mean $20 million a year for PetroStar, which has refineries in North Pole and Valdez, and $10 million a year for Tesoro's operation in Kenai. The companies would get the money in the form of tax credits or in cash if the company doesn't owe state taxes. All the refineries would have to do is show they spent $25 million a year on infrastructure. Guerra says the definition is wide open to include buying or altering any tangible property. And, says Guerra, there are no limits on what the refinery can do with its state money.
Keep the money in profits, give the money to their executives, give the money to their shareholders. There are no sideboards.
He proposed offering the refineries low-interest loans instead, but his amendment failed 8-3 in the House Finance Committee. PetroStar is owned by Arctic Slope Regional Corporation. ASRC Senior Vice President Tara Sweeney at the Capitol to press for the bill says she's doing what she can not to close the refinery.
The refining industry in Alaska is not healthy. We're down here working to ensure that it is, and the tools are there that are necessary to keep us afloat.
If it does close, the state says it would lose millions of dollars a year in revenues. But lawmakers who question the refinery assistance bill point out PetroStar hasn't opened its books for them. Fairbanks Democrat David Gutenberg says the bill was dropped on them in the last days of the session with no meaningful analysis. He'd like not to vote on it, but he says they're in a bind. The bill cleared the House Finance Committee yesterday. Sponsors hope to get it through both the House and Senate before the legislature adjourns this weekend. The Alaska Inuit Circumpolar Council met in Nome this week to define food security from an Alaska Inuit perspective.
When we say food security, again, we're talking about the entire environment, right? And there's so many changes occurring within that.
That's Carolina Behe, the ICC Alaska Traditional Knowledge and Science Advisor. She says as those changes occur, Alaska Inuits want a role in the decision-making. But she says their voices are not being heard and their precipitation is often excluded.
So if there is a lack of sea ice, if all of a sudden a new regulation is imposed that limits their accessibility to getting a food resource, they're not involved in making a decision that caused the impact of the environment or that resulted in the adaptation that people think need to take place for us to control the environment, right? It wouldn't be within their philosophy to even try to control the environment. It would be how to adapt within it.
Behe says creating this definition helps communicate an Inuit understanding to outside bodies like government agencies and development corporations. Education was also a major focus, particularly in teaching youth about subsistence. Failing to transfer this knowledge not only threatens food security, Behe says, but limits accessibility and alters identity.
Inuit are part of this ecosystem, and their culture has evolved because of this ecosystem, and this ecosystem has reacted to that. It's not static, it's continuously changing, and there's continual adjustments. But at this point, there's a lot of outside interest, and it's causing an increase in concern over food security.
The Alaska ICC is planning another meeting in Bethel later this year. They've already held two sessions in Barrow and Kotzebue. The gathered information will be peer-reviewed and then distributed to tribal councils, industry and government agencies, and the International Arctic Council. The Federal Subsistence Board is meeting in Anchorage this week, and on the agenda is the possibility to change the process by which communities are determined to be rural for subsistence purposes. KTUU reports that the board is reviewing public comments submitted over the last year before it decides whether to recommend changes to the process. The determination gives rural communities priority use of fish and game resources for subsistence rather than commercial or recreational use, a priority that many say is vital for food security and important culturally. Under the current rules, communities with more than 7,000 people would be considered non-rural unless they possess significant rural characteristics. Bethel, Sitka, Kodiak, and Ketchikan all have populations at or near that number. Many groups, including corporations formed under the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act and tribes, are asking to increase the threshold to a higher number. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Subsistence Policy Coordinator David Jenkins says it's just one of the many changes being considered.
We get a lot of comments insisting on the importance of subsistence itself and how communities think that it's been undervalued in the process of making rural determinations.
Only the secretaries of the Interior and Agriculture Departments can ultimately alter the rural determination process. The meetings in Anchorage will run until Thursday. How can mining best be done in Alaska and other Arctic nations? That's the topic for the Northern Regions Mining Summit, scheduled for late May in Vancouver.
We really are a neighborhood as 8 Arctic nations, and that we've got a lot to share and learn from one another. And the Northern Regions Mining Summit is a start to that.
That's Nils Andreasen with the Institute of the North, a nonprofit working to develop commonly owned lands and resources in the Arctic. Andreasen says representatives from the Bering Straits Native Corporation, Nana Corporations, and others will be taking part in the summit in May. When it comes to mining issues in Northwest Alaska, he says the conference will focus on community engagement on resource development throughout the Arctic. And he says Alaska's Red Dog Mine in northwest Alaska is being held up as a model.
I think that Alaska can point to Red Dog as one of its greatest examples of how to do it well and right. And it's actually an international example. Talking with people in Greenland, this is something they want to hear more about. How did this happen?
The conference won't shy away from more divisive topics, including the proposed road to the Ambler Mining District. The Northern Regions Mining Summit is scheduled from May 28th through 30th in Vancouver, Canada. More information is available at institutenorth.org. And looking in on the price of gold in New York at this hour, gold is up 40 cents an ounce to $1,303.80 an ounce. Silver up 5 cents an ounce to $19.72 an ounce. And zinc is at 92 cents a pound. Unofficially, it is 28 degrees outside the KNOM studios, 13 minutes after 9 o'clock. Good morning.